Today, I'd like to introduce you to our speaker, Marie Mollett. At 40, Marie had an overwhelming feeling of not knowing who she was. She hadn't expected life to feel so lonely at times. Though she's naturally gifted as an organizer, she realized there's some things in life that can't be fixed. And that realization caused her to go on a journey to know God more deeply in her daily experience. Marie has been wife to Brandon for 30 years and is mother to their 4 sons. She is deeply involved in relationships at Faith Builders as a mentor and a friend, and she loves to cook and she loves to laugh. So, welcome, Marie.
Thank you, Sarah. It is wonderful to be here with you. And this picture of my family, these people are my rock. They have seen and experienced me at my worst, and I hope at my best too. This picture was taken on Christmas Day of 2016, 3 days after burying my mom. And when we moved almost 20 years ago, we had committed to serving 5 years at Faith Builders. And I keep telling Brandon, it's the longest 5 years I've ever lived. So 1 year just kind of bleeds into another. One of my fears when we moved was that Mom would pass before we would move back to Indiana. And that fear came to pass. It became a reality. But I want to welcome each of you to this workshop. And with this amount of, you know, these were created to be workshops. And so with these amount of people, I do want some interaction with you folks. So be prepared to speak. And we'll kind of interact through a few things together. On our 9th anniversary in 1995, Brandon and I were reflecting on our life together. And what kind of couple we wanted to be. I remember 2 things from that conversation. And number 1 was, we didn't want to live a life that was cynical towards God and relationships. We tended to see a pattern in the older people around us. They just kind of became cynical. Oh, well, you learn. And so we didn't want to be that kind of a couple. We wanted to live a transparent life. Of course, we had no clue what that meant for us. Little did I realize what that would mean for me personally. I didn't realize how your insecurities show their ugly face when you move away from home. I didn't realize moving with a 3-month, 2, 4, and 7-year-old would be so lonely. I didn't realize how dark a year could be after your dad dies. He died a year after our move to Faith Builders in 97. Phone calls at 11 o'clock still petrify me. I didn't realize that knees could shake so much teaching Sunday school for the first time to a class of teachers. I didn't realize that abuse and limited education could make you feel so inferior. I didn't realize the cost of living in a glass bowl when you work for a Mennonite ministry. How you dress, how you spend your money. And even now, with social media, you just can't post any picture on Facebook you would like to post. I didn't realize what choir tour life as a family would be like. I didn't realize church conflicts could be so devastating. I didn't realize what it would feel like when two of your boys move out within 10 days of each other and feeling it's over. My parenting as a mommy for them at home is over. I didn't realize that at 54 you would have so many memories of not relating well. Sometimes I wonder if I will ever learn. Those ugly feelings can feel like they define who you are. And I'd like for you just to take a minute here in what is your I didn't realize? And just to write it on your paper, I didn't realize. And maybe you have that silent I didn't realize. Something you don't want to tell anybody how life is for you. What is your I didn't realize? There's 3 points I would like to cover in my workshop today. Number one is life and dreams, life and disappointments, and life and desire. And so thinking about life and dreams, and what makes this difficult is that we begin life with a storybook of innocent dreams. And I remember sitting in a Sunday school class, and this little three-year-old girl, she wanted to sit beside me in Sunday school, and having all boys, I was always delighted when a little girl wanted to sit beside me. And as we were going from our Sunday school class to the sanctuary, she squeezes my hand, and she says, "Marie, do you know what?" And I said, "No, what?" "Everybody loves me." Isn't that just precious when you think of the innocence of a three-year-old living so, "Everyone loves me." That's really special. When we get old, we think everybody is against us. But so I'd like to just, what are some of those childhood dreams? And here's where I want some interaction. What were some of your childhood dreams? So think of, and maybe not you, but as you think of childhood dreams, what are some of those? I'm going to open it up to you. Yes, having a spotless home. Yeah. Dreaming of a home. Someday I'm going to have my own home. Mm-hmm. Be a princess. Yes. Absolutely.
Adventure.
Yes, and that can take us all kinds of places. What are the adventures you dreamed of as a little girl? What else?
Being beautiful.
Being beautiful. Absolutely. We were so created for that. And as little people, it's just what we want to be, isn't it? Beautiful. We want to be beautiful. Yes. Good. What else? Didn't we also dream of just, we wanted to be a mommy? I mean, we played with dolls, and we just wanted to be a mommy. Children learn from the people around them. And you know, what is interesting to me is, if reading was important in your family, the childhood dreams are a whole lot more than if it's just the work ethic. that you grew up with. I grew up with the work ethic, and so, but if reading was important in your home, I mean, you visited many imaginary world out there, and that's why it's so important to just nurture those little people into loving to read and letting them go places in their mind and just imagine what life would be like. And so then we move into teenage dreams. I'm going to open that up too. What are some teenage dreams? Marry Prince Charming. I'm so glad you said that. Yes. Yes. And have all my questions answered. Yes. Yes. To be well liked and popular. Yes. Mm-hmm. Be strong, yes. Whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, make a difference in the world. Good. You know, but something, doesn't it seem like something begins to change? You know, our bodies change and even our dreams become, they begin to have a little bit more of an edge to them. And when I think of a young adult dreams, and we think of, this is life. This is what life is going to be. As a young adult, this is what it's going to look like. Right? This is what it's going to look like. And we knew exactly what needed to be in place for it to happen. If we have the disciplines, if we're committed to God, right? He's going to bless us. I mean, that's what the Old Testament tells us, right? Every story is about if you're committed to God, there's blessing. And so as a young adult, our dream, we know what needs to be in place. We need to have the disciplines. We need to be committed to God. And we reacted to people who were not doing well. Remember, right? We reacted to that. If they could just get their act together, it would go okay. As a young adult, we don't have questions. We have answers. But it doesn't take long, however, before our dreams are threatened. And even worse, they may shatter completely. And our puzzle may spill. And we're standing in the midst of life, not knowing which piece of puzzle shall I pick up. And then we ask ourselves, is it worth dreaming? Is it safe to dream? Is it okay to dream? Or is dreaming a fantasy that keeps me from reality? And what we had wanted or dreamed of doing can just feel so vastly different from what life is like for us today. And so we have disappointment that settles in, and life and disappointment, and just defining disappointment, the feeling of loss, sadness, or displeasure caused by the non-fulfillment of one's hopes or expectations. That's disappointment, and we all face it. And we want what we signed up for. We want good health. We want responsible, loving children. We want enjoyable marriages. We want close friendships. We want successful ministries. And we feel we deserve happiness after all. Why shouldn't we? And we spend so much energy trying to maintain these. We work hard to make these our source of happiness. And this becomes our identity. And so if I have responsible children, if I have an enjoyable marriage, if I have close friendships, if I have a successful ministry, then I must be doing okay. And those begin to identify who we are. And with everything that is accessible, we can work like crazy to make this all happen. If you need ideas on having a beautiful home, I mean, you have Pinterest. If you need if you have difficult relationships, you can even Google that, and you can read articles on it. And so we work so hard at having a happy life. We didn't know there would be so many pieces of the puzzle or the pieces not fitting. We didn't know or sign up for that there would be conflict in marriage. We didn't know that the enemy is always warfaring in our marriage when there are things that need to happen. And so a lot of warfare happens. And we have conflict because the enemy wants to distract us from what is going around us. And so we didn't know there would be so much conflict in marriage. We didn't know being a mommy would be so time-consuming and exhausting. We didn't know we would be this old and single. We didn't know that serving the Lord would have so many questions. So again, I want you to think about, write on your paper, what is your I didn't know? What is your I didn't know? Or what is your I didn't sign up for this? What is something that you're going through that you say, I didn't realize this would be, or I didn't know? What's your disappointment? So when you think of your disappointments in your life and just taking a little bit of time to reflect on those, what do we do? What do we do with our disappointments? And I'm opening this up to you. What do you do with your disappointments? Okay, it's okay to admit. Mm-hmm. Struggle. Yes. Mm-hmm. We struggle. Did you want to say any more on that? It's a little too risky, huh?
But it didn't start. We don't start with the giving it up to God. We have to struggle for it, and then we get. When we get ready to give it to God.
See if I can repeat that. They have buried 5 children, is that correct? Yes. And so you struggle with those. You can't just let it happen without struggling. What are some more ways? Maybe thinking a little bit more, maybe even on how do we negative, how do we respond to that negatively? Self-pity. Self-pity. Yes. Yeah. Try to work hard. Yes, we're a good bunch of Mennonites, aren't we? And we just work harder. That's good. Yeah. Blame. Oh, we are Eves, aren't we? We just blame. Back there. Cynical. Yes. Yes. It's good. We shut down and deaden our hearts. And you know what? In that, we might be more Buddhist than we would like to think we are. And I'd like to show you four noble truths of the Buddhist. Truth number one is life is suffering. There is always, in everyone's life, a gap between desire and reality. And so that's what life is about. Life is, the gap is suffering. And if we can somehow get rid of that gap. So that's truth number one. Life is suffering. Truth number two is the cause of all suffering is desire. People suffer because they desire what they do not experience. It is not possible to have everything you desire. Therefore, if you desire, you will suffer. So let's get rid of desire. It's all God's will, isn't it? If the Lord wants me to have it, He'll make it happen. Truth number three. The way to end suffering is to end desire. Want nothing, then nothing can disturb you. A person without dreams will never suffer the pain of seeing them shattered. So we feel like sometimes we're better off just not to want anything. Then I won't be disappointed. Truth number four, spend your life learning to eliminate desire. And then they also have the Eightfold Path. And the way of Buddha shows you how to eliminate desire. But you know, we live out of that more than we would like to believe we do. It's hard to dream. It's hard to desire. It's hard to put ourselves out there. And one question that Brandon will ask, or that I get frustrated when Brandon asks me this question, when I'm not doing well or I'm frustrated with a situation, and then he will say, Marie, what do you want? Oh. So I'm frustrated because I don't know what I want. So what do you want? What is your silent scream is what I call it. What do you want? And I remember a time, and I would talk to Donna Kaufman, and I would wrestle with this whole thing of desire and what is the point of this, and she would always draw me to the verse, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. And what we forget is we forget that the deepest desire we have of our heart is to have a relationship with God. That's our deepest desire. And we want a personal God. We want a God who we can call our Father. And too often, we're too busy managing our happy life that we forget that our deepest desire is to have a relationship with God. That really is our desire. But we're so stuck on having this happy life that we forget about our desire for God. And so what do we do with desire? Life and desire. When Jesus said, let not your heart be troubled, he wasn't talking about deadening desire. But in our moments of intense grief, we talk differently to God. And so when any of those are challenged, what does it do? When my health is challenged, it really does take me to the heart of God, doesn't it? When my children are challenging me, and it doesn't matter what age they are, whether from infant to adult, we're called, it takes us to the heart of God. When we have conflict in marriage, it takes us to the heart of God, if we let it. And so we work so hard at the happy life, and rightly so. We do need to be responsible people. But do the conflicts that we have in life, do they take you to the heart of God? And we want it, but how do we actually get there? And I love, One thing to think about when you think of life and desire is confession. And I love the word confession, and I don't mean that in the sense of I'm sorry. I'm looking at just confession of I need the Lord. God, I am angry at my husband. God, I am angry at my children. I'm angry for the way I have poured myself into church life, and it's nasty right now. That type of confession. And I love to take Psalm 142 and make it a personal confession to God. I cry aloud to the Lord. I lift up my voice to the Lord for mercy. I pour out my complaint before him. Before him, I tell him my trouble. What is my complaint? Be specific. Confess. What is your complaint? When my spirit goes faint within me, it is you who know my way. In the path where I walk, men have hidden a snare for me. Look at my right and see, no one is concerned for me. Have you ever confessed that? No one is concerned for me. Nobody cares. I have no refuge. No one cares for my life. I cry to you, O Lord. I say, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. And it feels like for myself when I do this, I need to be very specific in those first four verses. What is my complaint? What do I need confessed? And then I can say, I cry to you, O Lord. I say, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Now God becomes a personal God. He's not just a God that, God, forgive me for being critical today. Really? It's pretty hard to say the specifics of what you were critical about. But God will become a personal God. He will become a personal refuge for you. Verse 6, listen to my cry, for I am in desperate need. Rescue me from those who pursue me, for they are too strong for me. Set me free from my prison, that I may praise your name. Then the righteous will gather about me because of your goodness to me. And isn't that one of the deepest desires we want? Is we want people to look at our lives and say, I want her Jesus. Right? And her Jesus is a personal, personal, personal Jesus. Because she confesses specifics. I have been looking at the story of Job's wife and just very intrigued with her story. When we think of Job's wife, what do you think of? Yeah, it's okay.
Discourage her husband.
Discourage, yeah, mm-hmm. Curse God and die. She was bitter. What if her curse God and die was an endearing statement? Think about it. She has just lived through 10 open graves. She has just buried 10 of her children. Now she has watched her husband scraping his boils with pottery. And that was harder, to see her husband suffer like that, than the open graves. Day after day after day, she sees her husband deteriorating. God, just take him. This is harder than grieving my 10 children. So what if that was an endearing statement? And Job responds, sweetheart, you're better than this. I know you to be a better person than this. Don't be like the foolish women. You're a better person than that. Something to think about, isn't it? She was honest. She was out there. And when Naomi returns and says, do not call me Naomi. I am a bitter woman. That was maybe more drawing to her community people back home in her home area than to pretend that everything's fine. So now they had something to relate to. She actually admitted that she was a bitter person. And I remember the time, and it was not a happy moment for me at all, when I was struggling like crazy and it felt like life was caving in on me. And Brandon looks at me and says, Marie, you are an angry woman. Oh. That wasn't very endearing, was it? But it was some of the best words he spoke to me because I didn't realize it. It was so in me. I didn't realize all that was going. I knew I was just frustrated. But for him to say, "You are an angry woman." And I'm like, "Oh, that's not the kind of person I want to be." So in our desire, confession is important, and we admit our fears. And when you think of jumping back a little bit to Job's wife, the story there in Naomi, I love the quote that Larry Crabb gives. There are times in life when it would be easier to not believe in God at all than to believe in him and wonder where he is. Do you get that? It would be easier not to believe in God at all than it is to believe in him and wonder, "God, where are you?" So admit your fears. Admit your fears about the happy life. And then ask the hard questions. The hard questions of, we wonder if anything can redeem the losses of our past. And maybe some of you have not lived long enough for that, but some of us are here sitting and wondering, how will God redeem the losses I have? Ask the hard question of God, where are you? God, who are you? And why such intense warfare if God is more powerful? That hard question. If God is all powerful, then why is the warfare so intense? I also would like to challenge you. Before that, our hard questions always need to take us to the face of God. And what I have here is, may our questions draw us to seek the face of God and not just the questions of, I need to figure this out. But may our questions always seek the face of God and be fully present. So we have confession, we have asked the hard questions, and be fully present. Don't live out of a pot of stew where some of the things I like and some of them I don't, and so I'm just okay with this pot of stew. When you hurt. Let it hurt. Don't try to use the scale and balance it out and figure it out. No, just hurt. And so often, if you're like I am, you spend so much time, so much energy living life of, okay, so this bad is happening to me. Well, this person has it worse. And so I just compare, right? Now it's all taken care of. And I never needed to talk to God about it. I never needed to receive grace for it. And I love what Gary Sitzer says in one of his books, that you don't compare. God wants to pour grace on your life and on your story. And when we compare, we miss an opportunity of grace. We miss an opportunity of coming into relationship with God. And so hurt. And what has given me so much courage is we are in Easter season right now, is Jesus in Gethsemane. And when he says to his disciples, "Can you just sit with me? Can you just sit with me?" And he asks God, "Is there any way out of this?" Now, if Jesus can do this, if Jesus can say, "Is there any way out of this?" when he has been for days and days and years teaching, this is what's going to happen. And if Jesus can ask, Is there any way out of this? Am I not allowed to ask that? This is too much for me. Can you come sit with me? If we deny how badly we hurt, we remain unaware of how badly we want God to be in our story. When we live out of our vision of the happy life, we tend to demand from others what we cannot control. And so even though when we hurt when we laugh. Laugh, ladies. Enjoy life. If the happy life is right now for you to enjoy, ladies, enjoy it as a gift from God. If you're not in conflict in marriage right now, if you're not in conflict in other relationship, if your church life is going well, ladies, worship God and thank God. Don't be, well, I'm just going to enjoy it because, you know, when I'm up on high, it's going to come back down. No. Just be grateful today and say, God, all this for me. All this for me. And I get to enjoy it. And so be fully present in what is happening today. Don't live in the fantasy of tomorrow. And when my mom passed, it was several weeks later, I was with a lady in the community at Walmart, and she stopped me and, you know, wanted to give me my condolences. And she said, oh, I have to spend more time with my mom. I just need to make more time for my mom. And I'm like, no, it's not making more time. It's about being present when you're with her. You only have so much time. So when you're with your mom, enjoy it. Be present. Don't try to rearrange your schedule so that you have more time with your mom. But be present with whatever you're doing. Be present and live in that and enjoy it. In each of my, and so when I think of, this is really how life should be. Our deepest desire is a relationship with God. And so when I think of in each of my I didn't realize moments, you know, God met me and he still meets me today as I tell him my disappointments. And you know, 30 years into marriage, you realize there are some things that your husband is just not going to change. This is who he's going to be. And you would thought, well, surely it would change. And you realize, no, it's not going to change. It's not. What am I going to do? So God still meets me, and I need him. Because I need him in those moments to know, you know what? I can't do this on my own. I need you to show me how to love. God has become and is continuing to become a personal God. And there's just, ladies, there's just no shortcut in getting to know God. Getting to know God is not walking around our problems and disappointments, but walking through them. And when you're walking through them, you need people beside you to say, press in, don't retreat, press in. And we keep pressing in, and we don't step back. And we find God in the midst of them. And it's often, so often, as we reflect on our stories that, wow, God was there. But you know, as we're pressing in, where is he? And ask those questions. God, where are you? But take also time then to reflect and say, God was there. God was there. So as we think of, this is not the life I signed up for. Will God change our circumstances? Maybe, maybe not. Will he change our hearts? Without a question. Will he bring us joy more and more? Ladies, go in peace, and the Lord be with you. Thank you. Did you have an announcement? Okay.
Sometimes life doesn't happen the way we want it to. But thank you for the reminder, Marie, to be honest with God about our struggles. And for the reminder that our unfulfilled